Ladies and gentlemen, tonight, the reigning, defending, undisputed Universal Heavyweight Champion,
Wildcat Radio 2.0. Bear down, you beautiful people.
What's up, everybody? This is Wildcat Radio 2.0. I'm Aaron Green. He's Brett Berry. We're recording on the day of the Final Four that features Arizona, the state, not the basketball program, because the Final Four is being played in Glendale, Arizona. Arizona Wildcats, Brett, it's been a little bit more than a week now since we learned that they would not be a part of it. Tommy Lloyd's team, the number two seed in the Western region, seemed to have everything lining up for him, right? You know, everybody thought, hey, that North Carolina's the easiest number one seed, and they were playing the number six Clemson Tigers, and Arizona played arguably the worst 10 minutes or so of basketball they could have ever played. Like, we talked the week before our show, we're like, what are the odds? Like, they have so many good players, what are the odds that they all play bad at the same time? Well, for 10 minutes, it was 100%, because there wasn't a single player in Arizona that did well. Then Arizona came back, took the lead briefly, but ended up losing 77-72. And yeah, the season that was probably better than a lot of people thought it would be and still finished shorter than they probably should have finished came to an end.
I feel like it's another year where the roster went to the level of expectation in preseason that then were expectations were raised, and then people are disappointed that they're not a Final Four, and suddenly they backfill the argument of, oh, you Final Four talent and can't get there. But that's just me poking at the narrative.
Well, but, yeah, I mean, they were number one in the country at a time during the season. They were top 10 most of the season. And yeah, once everything came together the way it did with Caleb Love being Pac-12 Player of the Year caliber, right? Umar Bhalla taking another step forward. There was reason that, yeah, they were a number two seed for a reason, which in theory means they're one of the top, what, eight teams in the tournament. So to not even make it to the Elite Eight, if you look at just the stats, and like Evan Miakawe had him on, he thought his numbers had Arizona as one of the best teams in the country of, you know, Final Four teams. So I don't think it's wrong to say they, I mean, this is the nature of the NCAA tournament, right? That only four teams make it to the Final Four. Only one team wins the whole thing. And all it takes is one off game, and even the best team could lose. You know, and like we're recording on Saturday before the Final Four games happen. NC State is in the Final Four. Are they one of the four best teams in college basketball? No, absolutely not. They're not. You know, Alabama, are they one of the four best teams in college basketball? No, they're not. Like UConn and Purdue, yes. And by the time you listen to this, I'm sure the championship game will have been decided or like who's going to be playing. But the point is like it doesn't, you don't have to be the best team to make it to the Final Four of the tournament's final weekend. It helps. But just because you're really good doesn't mean you're not going to get beat. Arizona, I thought was a really good team, but their biggest flaw, the first 10 minutes of that game against Clemson, I don't even know what. Like they were just tripping all over themselves. It was like they never played basketball together before. After that, they just couldn't make a three-pointer, an open three-pointer, and that's what did them in my opinion.
Yeah, it was kind of a disaster for the first 10 minutes. And then some of, you know, Arizona's weaknesses got exposed. I know a lot of people are criticizing Tommy Lloyd in a lot of way for getting out-coached, and in a lot of ways, I do think that Clemson developed a better game plan and Arizona was slow to react to it.
I mean, what was their game plan? What were they doing?
They're packing the paint, giving Arizona open threes and making them miss
so
them.
So Tommy Lloyd's game plan of don't make your open threes. Like, well, come on, Tommy, what are you thinking?
Well, but it's a situation where it was putting Clemson in the puncher's chance, best chance to win, which is make open threes. And collectively as a team, I would say they've been a streaky 3-point shooting team, right?
That's fair.
And I've been, you know, and the challenge here is when I've been thinking about this since the game, Adam, and it's, you know, when you're the hunted, it's the other team that's going to try to coach around you. It's Rick Majerus, Utah, pulling out the triangle in 20 years ago.
Because if you show up and just roll the ball out and play, like, I don't want to say man up basketball, but the better team's going to win most of the time.
Yeah, and if you are the hunted and you start running out gimmicky things, people are going to say, why are you going away from what you're good at?
Uh-huh.
Right?
It's up to their team to adjust to you.
Yeah, and you know the adjustments that I think Tommy Lloyd and the roster could have made, you know, they could have they could have made it a point to find ways to get the ball to the soft spot of the packed zone kind of defense kind of thing, right? They could have, you know, done some wrinkles in terms of how they were rotating on defense. That, I mean, some of that was just mental communication lapses on defense where they gave Clemson, you know, probably 6 points for free, right? Yeah. Umar Ballo went 1 for 7 and they lost by 5 on, you know, 1 for 7 on free throws. You know, if he hits a few more of those, it's a little bit closer. But it's the summation of all of those things. And that first 10 minutes was just absolutely atrocious. What did they get down, like 14 or something like that?
Yeah, and like we're watching, it's like, well, they're actually not out of this game, because if things turn off, the better team starts playing like it. And for the rest of the game, I think I tweeted after, I'm like, Arizona played well after the first 10 minutes. They played good enough to win, you know, obviously they outscored them over the last 30 minutes. And, you know, Arizona took the lead in the second half. And we thought, okay, they're going to start to pull away, right? The better team's going to assert themselves. This is what happens. You know, there was a time right before they took it where Pelle Larsen, like, they drew up a nice play to take the lead, and he missed a layup. And that was kind of indicative of how the game went. Like, there's not a single – I mean, Jaden Bradley played well. And that's one of the big takeaways from the end of the season, is how good Jaden Bradley was. But, like, every one of Arizona's key players made – I don't want to say crucial errors, but just – didn't play well when they needed them, right? Like Umar Ballo, 1 of 7 from free throws. No one's expecting him to go 6 of 7, but 3 of 7, 4 of 7 changes the game. You know, Boswell made 1 of 6 shots, 1 of 5 threes. Pelle Larsen, 2 of 9, 1 of 6 threes. Caleb Love, 5 of 18 shots, 0 of 9 from three. And most of those were good looks. Again, this is a team that shoots 37% or so from 3-point range during the season. They made 5 of 28. They made 18%. If they shoot their average, that's 5 more threes. You know, and they win this game. And you can make the case, and you're not wrong to say they need to find ways to get the ball inside. Because when they were doing it at times to Ballo, they were getting dunks, right? But otherwise, he was getting fouled and missing free throws. So it's kind of empty possessions even in that regard. Like, there are things that I imagine, like, yeah, I'm sure Tommy Loy and that coaching staff have gone back and looked like, oh, we could have done this differently. We should have done that differently. But a lot of the Arizona offense is just getting open looks. And they had guys who shoot 35% or higher on three-pointers getting wide open looks. And if you're not making those, and what else? Like, Clemson's going to keep packing the paint, like, and daring you to shoot. It's kind of like the Dayton game early on. Arizona came out just firing on all cylinders, and that changed the way Dayton could defend him, right? You know, Long Beach State, I know these are different levels of competition, but when Arizona was making threes, their offense is really difficult to stop. But if you're not making shots from the outside, and these weren't covered threes. These weren't, you know, like, it wasn't asking a lot to make an open shot. And a few of them bounced out, rimmed out, whatever. 5 of 28 from 3. And yeah, maybe they generally should have shot like 23. I'm not going to, like, to me, it's basketball. It's make shots, and they didn't make shots. And they were still in the game. They only lost by 5. You know, they had a chance the entire way through. Late in the last couple of years, just got to stop, and they couldn't do that. They got backdoor cut. Arizona was trying to change up their defense some, and they paid for it. So, like, Clemson deserved to win the game just as much as Arizona deserved to lose it based on the things they didn't do.
Yeah, it's like, you know, like, it's like we've talked about, and like you said, like, everybody talks about, like, you know, Tommy Lloyd's record in March. It's like, you know, every team but one loses in the last game.
Well, now
he's
got an above 500 record in March as well.
Yeah, but that won't change the narrative of the people that are maybe don't have Arizona's interests at heart. But it's, you know, it's a little bit frustrating. I mean, like, I think there was subtle things that Tommy Lloyd could have done. You know, Keshawn Johnson was 0 for 3 on threes. Am I telling him to not shoot threes? No, but is that our way we're going to win the game? Probably not. Caleb Love obviously going 0 for 9 is kind of fluky, but if it's one of those days, then Caleb, find a way to go see, you know, there's the mental thing of see the ball go through the basket kind
sure.
of thing and draw some. And Healy shot 3 free throws the whole game. He was 3 of 3. You know,
that's the thing. Like, he got some layups when he was aggressive. He was getting buckets, but, like, he saw the ball go through the hoop. Like, I don't mind these guys taking, because it's like, if one of those threes goes in, it changes the entire. I mean, I saw someone, I think it was a tweet or someone said, like, how much 3-pointers make a difference in March Madness. Just the momentum swings, right? Just a 3-pointer in a close game. If any one of those threes, Pelle Larsen, wide open three, and a guy who shoots 40%. If Caleb Love, obviously, he makes fun of, like, oh, watch Caleb Love get going. Like, those change the dynamic, because all of a sudden it's like, oh, no, Arizona's hitting threes. Now how do we stop them?
Well, I think the time in the game when I thought, oh, there, that might be it, was when KJ Lewis, not exactly known for his outstanding 3-point shooting, at least, or just hasn't done it that much. Mm-hmm. You know, he shot his and made it. And I feel like that, if I recall, that was at a, oh, maybe a little good momentum moment.
Yeah.
And it's almost like when he hits that, that's like a bonus. It's like when Keshaw Johnson hits a three, that's like, oh, that's a nice bonus play. Mm-hmm. You expect Caleb Love to hit 30%+. You expect Pelle Larsen was one of the top 3-point shooters in the Pac-12, and he went, what, 1 for 5? Sometimes
one
that's
for
just
six.
The way, 1 for 6, yeah. Even worse. So it sucks. It's, you know, there's no way around that. It was, it's frustrating where Alabama, who Arizona mm-hmm. beat early in the years in the Final Four, North Carolina did look like the beatable one seed.
And they got beat by Alabama. Marquette lost right after Arizona did, same issue, like missing all their threes. Like it happens.
Yeah. This is the beauty and the agony and the frustration that is March. And it's just not been, the ball hasn't bounced Arizona's way in the last while for a lot of these games. But also it's the reaction to it is the angst of the 23 years since they've been in a Final Four. Well, and that's where the narrative comes from.
They've been a 1-2-2 seed the last couple of seasons and haven't broke through. Right. And I wrote something for AZ Desert Storm. It's like, as long as you're in that range year after year, and I don't expect them to be a 1 or 2 seed every single year. They're going to have down years where they're like a 5 seed, a 6 seed, you know, in that range.
Hey Adam, what were they in the 97 tournament?
Well, right. But like my point is, like, if you're, I thought this in the Sean Miller years, and obviously that those are a different type of experience when they fell short, and the TJ McConnell era especially. But it's like, if you put yourself in this position where you're a good team in the tournament with one of the higher seeds, eventually you'll break through, right? That just happens. Like Purdue finally made a Final Four. They lost in the first round last season. You know, they were a joke. And they're back. They were dominant again this season, and one seed once again, and they're in the Final Four. And you have to think that as long as Arizona can stay in that range, eventually, I mean, it's not even, like, this one didn't hurt to me, like, the Wisconsin, now those are Elite Eight losses, right? It's different in the Sweet 16. But, like, it didn't hurt as much as it's like, yeah, they deserve to lose that game. Like, they went into the tournament healthy for the first time under Tommy Lloyd. It wasn't like they got a bad draw. Clemson wasn't this miserable matchup like Houston was 2 years ago. It was like, no, they just played a bad game against a solid team. Clemson wasn't great. Clemson didn't do anything particularly special that game. Just Arizona was exceptionally bad. And that happens. Like, it's, you'd rather it didn't. And we didn't think it would happen because they had so many good players, 8 of the top 150 or 175 in college basketball. But, like, this is the result. When you play a team-wide, other than, I don't want to put, Jaden Bradley was awesome again. And Balo was plenty fine, you know, 15-15 on 7 of 10 field goals. But again, 1 of 7 free throws, not good. But if they even played, like, an average game, they beat Clemson and go to the Elite Eight. What happens there against Alabama as it was, who knows. But
they probably shoot 60% on threes and win by 40.
And if they had played Clemson in a 7-game series, they probably win 4-2, maybe even 4-1, right? Like, mm-hmm. Arizona is a better team than Clemson. They were a better team going into that game, and they're a better team than Clemson leaving that game. But in that afternoon, Clemson played better basketball and won.
Yeah.
So is it what could have been for this team? Yeah. Because now it's like you go into what's next. But, you know, is this like a damning thing for Tommy Lloyd or the program? No, they won 27 games this season. They won the last year of the Pac-12. They had the Pac-12 Player of the Year. They had good wins throughout the season, big wins. Like, it wasn't a lost or waste of a season. It's just a disappointing ending.
Yeah, Evan Miakawa had Arizona as a 70% chance to win. That still means there's a 30% chance of losing, friends. That, you know, this is how probabilities work. And, you know, I think Clemson played well enough to win / not badly enough to lose. And
yeah,
Arizona
played,
well, like, I'm looking at these stats. Like, they only shot 32% from three, but Arizona shot 18. And I'm looking at this one graph shows this, and it makes it look like they way outshot Arizona because they almost doubled Arizona's 3-point shooting percentage, but it's still not even a good 3-point percentage.
Arizona out-rebounded them, had fewer turnovers, had more steals, more blocks, but make threes.
Well, but that was what I was going to bring up next. So Arizona had 8 steals and Clemson had 10 total turnovers. So they only turned the ball over twice of their own accord.
Yeah.
Arizona turned it over only 9 times, but Clemson only had 4 steals. So again, the
unforced errors.
It's not a lot of turnovers, but it's the unforced things that add up.
Stepping on the baseline out of bounds or the sideline out of bounds and just throwing passes away. Yeah.
You know, or the missing on the defensive rotations. These things all add up over time, and it just, it's what aggregates to be a loss. And, you know, for the people that think Tommy Lloyd there should be fired or doubted. Like, shut up. You're the same people that thought he couldn't recruit until he started. I'm over the nonsense.
No, it's like basketball isn't that difficult, right? Like, when your best players needed to play better, they mm-hmm. didn't. And Clemson's best players, obviously, like P.J. Hall stayed on the floor, had 17 points. Shefflin had 14 points in 36 minutes. And they got big, like Hunter had some big shots for them. Like, every time Arizona in the second half of that game looked like they're going to make a run, Clemson banked in a three or did a nice out-of-timeout play and got buckets, right? Arizona, I think, had a one-point lead a couple of times or tied or just whatever. They could never pull away. It looked like, okay, here's what's going to happen. Arizona's the better team. They got their mojo back. Watch them pull away, that little death run. I think Tommy Lee said after he was like, we never got like that stretch of like 7-8, you know, in the second half, which is like a little bit of breathing. They never got that. Every time Arizona got the lead, it went right back. And that's a credit to Clemson for their poise. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's basketball. And, again, if they played tomorrow, I would assume Arizona would beat them. You know, like if they played again, Arizona wins that game most likely. But that's the beauty and the tragedy of the NCAA tournament, that it's one game. You know, it's little giants. It's one time. And sometimes when it's just one time, the underdog can win. The annexation of Puerto Rico or whatever it is.
Well, but it's, you know, a couple things you pointed out, that PJ Hall stayed on the floor and they never won on the death run. I think these things are connected, and it goes back to what I was talking about of the game. And you said the game being simple. Clemson packing the paint meant Arizona was not getting the ball down to follow as much in the first half, the first 10 minutes, which usually is, we talked about it, they usually try to get their big guy in foul trouble, and the packing the paint negates that, kept Hall out of foul trouble. Mm-hmm. Arizona shooting and missing threes. If they're making the threes, it doesn't matter, but it's, you know, that's when the death run happens, is when PJ Hall's out in the second half with three or four fouls, right?
Yeah, well, then Arizona gets a ball or dunk, gets a turnover, makes a three, you know, and
exactly.
All of a sudden it's
this is where I sit. That's basically it's not even a complicated thing. That's where I wish Arizona had found a way to try to force that issue earlier into the zone. And that's where I think Clemson had a simple but effective game plan, and Arizona played into it a little bit without making adjustments or shots, and they needed to do one of those two things, and they didn't.
I don't know how much, I mean, and I'm not a basketball savant, so I'm not going to say, I just don't know how many more adjustments you can make when your big guy can't make a free throw when he gets fouled, and your wings and guards aren't making wide open three-pointers. Like, at some point, it's just like, you got to put the ball on the hoop.
My point is more, if you get three fouls on PJ Hall in the first half.
Yeah.
If he still shoots 1 of 7 on free throws, the game goes differently.
Probably.
Suddenly in the second half, Ballo gets the ball down low and just dunks the ball and misses the free throw, and you still get 2 points. Or you get them in the bonus, you get them in the double bonus, you get Caleb Love driving, and even when he's not hitting threes, he's a 90% free throw shooter. That's how Arizona wins that game.
Yeah.
And they didn't course correct during the game. Like I said, they either need to make adjustments or make open shots, and they didn't either.
Arizona scored 41 points in the second half of that game without making three-pointers. Like, after the first 10 minutes of that game, they scored like 60 points over the next like 30 minutes. Like, it's not bad. Like, was it Arizona at their best? Clearly not. But they were, in a lot of ways, everything but making threes, they were right there. You know, the defense as a whole wasn't terrible. It just had lapses, you know, at some big spots at the end. But, you know, they settled down the turnovers in the second half. They did everything that they needed to do to make that run and make that death run and pull away in the second half, except make shots. Like, that's it. That's basketball. Yeah. And it's disappointing because you look back, like, the last couple tournament losses, right, when they lost to Princeton. Arizona was 3 of 16 from 3. When they lost to Houston in the Sweet 16, they made 7 of 22. Oh, God, to make 7 three-pointers in this game, they would have won.
Oh, yeah. Which I wonder why they didn't toy around with Moroskis or somebody like that going in to try to shoot him out of that hack line defense. Well, but
yeah, things that we could wonder now. But that's a good segue, I think. But let's take a break, and when we come back, the question is, now that Arizona is out of the tournament and this season is over, where does the program go next? Let's talk about it.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
We're back. It's Wildcat Radio 2.0, and kind of touched on it briefly there. Why didn't Arizona go with Moroskis maybe as someone who could make threes, because he showed in at least limited action that he was a pretty good three-point shooter? Well, that won't be an issue anymore. The question always, and this is college basketball, this is college athletics now, after every season, it's like, where do the programs go next, right? You know, who are you losing to graduation? Who are you losing to the pros? Who are you losing to transfer? We're recording on Saturday, so not everything. Like, the transfer portal window is still open. More Arizona guys could enter and decisions have to be made. The only person who absolutely cannot return is Keyshawn Johnson. He has exhausted all his eligibility. Everyone else, in theory, could come back. Already, Moroskis has entered the portal. Philly B has entered the transfer portal. Obviously, we don't expect Caleb Love back. Umar Ballo probably not back, but who knows? Pelle Larsen probably gone. Right, like Arizona, as it stands, is likely to lose at least four members of their starting lineup. And the fifth, Colin Boswell, might be a good portal candidate with Jaden Bradley's emergence towards the end of the season. It's like Arizona basketball coming off a season where they won 27 games, moving to the Big 12 with tons of question marks, right?
Yeah, it's, and you know, just because somebody goes into the portal doesn't 100% mean they are gone. But I'm blanking on our old favorite receiver that set up.
Oh, Mejon Wright.
Yeah, Mejon Wright or left, he could never decide. you know, so it's going to be a season of turnover, for better or worse. I think we're back into the spot where we've been the last couple of off seasons, where everybody goes, oh, we got to blow the whole thing up and we're going to have no roster and blah, blah, blah. And it's the same thing. And every year it works out fairly well. And then you build your hopes up when they beat some teams early and we just need to finish the thing at the end. Right. But it's the nature of college basketball right now. It's one of the reasons why parity is so high, is that talent abhors a vacuum and a talent abhors a single digit minute in the box score. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I'd like to think that Tommy Lloyd and staff have earned the trust of people that he can fill out a roster effectively. They've got a really intriguing class coming in, no matter what happens with the potential, you know, super COVID senior potentials coming back of the starters. But it's gonna be a different looking team. I think Jaden Bradley, if he's coming back, I think he's pretty much played his way into a starting role.
He looks like he could be a star, right? His speed, his strength, he's aggressive in getting to the bucket. His decision making could still get a little bit better as a point guard. But if he adds a consistent three-point shot, not one that he has to shoot five a game, but that, like, kind of like TJ McConnell, where you don't have to shoot them, but if you're left wide open, you need to show you can make them, which he did in the tournament, he could be a star, especially with the way he plays defense.
Well, he was in that game against Clemson, and in the latter half of the season, he was a five-star recruit for a reason. He's a great athlete. He has some limitations in terms of his, you know, shooting ability or whatever, but he's also proven he can hit open jumpers, and sometimes he's hit some pretty tough ones. But he also, like, he's got pretty good length for a point guard, really good athleticism. He gives me almost like early 90s NBA point guard vibes, where it's like you didn't have to be Steph Curry, right? You could actually be somebody that was kind of a slasher, facilitator, you know, probing point guard that plays good defense. You know, like, it's like a sleepy Floyd kind of. There's a deep cut for you. I turned 40, Adam. Let me bring up a reference from Hoops that tells you how old I am. But no, he looks like a guy that is maybe not gonna put up incredible stat lines, but he's gonna be somebody that is a well-rounded player. Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked about, like, we talked about Moroskis entered the portal. What remains to be seen, I think, what he is as a player. There's probably reasons why he didn't see the floor. Is he the best fit for a Big 12 where it's just a more consistently different level of athlete than maybe what you'd see at a subpar conference compared? But is the real question with Moroskis, is he, you know, we've talked about the most overrated player is the guy that does one thing really well, and the most underrated player is the player that does everything kind of well. I think Jaden Bradley is the latter. Moroskis, I don't think we know, but he could just be a great shooter.
Well, like the guys that have entered the portal so far, Philly B and Moroskis, they didn't see minutes last season. Now, there is this sense like, oh, we want to see players develop within the program, right, and see them as sophomores, juniors, seniors, which, fair. I like to see that, too. But if everything goes the way it's expected to, Arizona has it with Henry Vassar. Krivas comes back for another season. Dylan Anderson for another season. KJ Lewis, Jaden Bradley. You know, if Boswell comes back. There's a lot of guys that are set to come back. You know? Like, it's every team is going to be different every season. I guess we'll see how many players, you know, if Balo, Pella, and Caleb Love, they decide to go, come back, transfer, whatever happens. But it's going to be a different team. Doesn't mean it has to be bad. Like, this time last season, people were wondering, what's going to happen with this team? You know, you lose to Bellis. Like, what are you going to have anything? And they're like in on different transfer options, and they didn't get him. And all of a sudden, they get Jaden Bradley. Oh, Jaden Bradley, that's nice. That's fine. That's not superstar recruiting class. You got just KJ Lewis coming in and a couple of European guys or foreign-born players. And then they get Caleb Lovelace in the process. They get Keyshawn Johnson. It's like, oh, okay, that's interesting. So like the team that Arizona is right now, yeah, they got to figure out who's going to be on it, who's coming back. But I have every expectation. I had Tommy Lloyd will be able to put together a pretty good team with Arizona's NIL abilities, you know, what they have to offer and the style of play and the type of coach that Tommy Lloyd is. I don't imagine they're not going to have their pick of everybody, but there's going to be, if they need to go get something and there's someone that they like and who's interested in their program, I imagine Arizona's going to put together, you know, can get them. So I don't worry for Arizona having talent. The question is, does someone like Krivas take a step forward? Is Dylan Anderson in his red shirting, has he taken any steps forward, right? Can KJ Lewis have that freshman to sophomore jump that happens with Jaden Bradley? If he, as a starting point guard, is he still kind of like the role player point guard? Does he kind of elevate his game to being like a true starting point guard in college basketball? Like, there's a lot of things that if they happen, Arizona can be really good again. But that's the case every season if they happen. If any of the freshmen, Carter Bryant, Jamari Phillips, Emmanuel Steven, you know, Josan Sanan, if they come in and play well right off the bat, Arizona's a better team than we think, right? That's going to be every single season. Like, gone are the days where it's like, oh, here's these three-year guys who've all been here. And that's the one thing actually about this era of basketball, I think, hurt for me for Arizona. Like, Umar Balo had been here for three seasons, Pelle Larson for three seasons. These are a couple guys that have been here since Tommy Lloyd got to Arizona. Chances are they're moving on. So it's truly a different era of Arizona basketball, even from that. But that's college sports. That's how it works.
Yeah, and it's funny because going into the season, I think most Arizona fans were sleeping on KJ Lewis as a barely inside the top 100 recruit. And now they think they're expecting him to make this leap to be superstar. Mm. And I love KJ Lewis. I think it remains to be seen what, you know, I think this is a really important offseason for him. Like he could go like, he reminds me the most of a Juwan McClellan freshman that looked tantalizing with potential and then had injury problems and just kind of fell apart. Some people see Hassan Adams. I think he's way more skilled. I think Hassan Adams is the most overrated Arizona star of all time just because he could jump real high. I'm pretty big on Mo Krivas. I think he's going to move it. If Balo leaves, I think he's going to be an all Pac-12 contending center. Like, I think he's that good.
I mean,
with another year of development.
I don't imagine he'll be an all Pac-12 type player next season, but I mean, I can guarantee it, actually. He won't be.
Well, fair. Damn it. It's going to be weird. Yeah, I'm like, well, he doesn't have to face,
well, even,
have
like,
to
along,
face Dante.
Along those lines, too, like everyone, like the Big 12 is good. I think a lot of people overrate maybe, like, not the entirety of the Big 12 isn't like just filled with dominant basketball. Like, I'm not going to say Arizona slots in immediately, especially with the roster that they have projected right now as a top three team or anything like that. But if you look at the Big 12, there are some lesser teams. And, I mean, ASU's coming along. So, like, there, it's not entirely a, you know, dominant, amazing conference. But, yeah, I mean, you have your...
You meant ASU's coming along as if they're coming. They're not coming along as a program. They're
coming. Oh, God, no. But, like, yeah, I mean, Houston's really good. I imagine they're going to lose some from this year's team. Iowa State, same thing. Baylor. Every one of these programs goes through this. You know, Kansas had a down year last season. They won 23 games. And I forget what seed they were. I think they're like a 4 seed or something like that, or a 3 seed. And then went into the tournament all injured. It's going to be fun because there's going to be more good conference games and good conference opponents that care about basketball. But is this some like, oh, it's the Big 12, Arizona, what if it's going to... No, Arizona's a good program. One of the best programs in the country. Yes, there's going to be some turnover from this past season. That's how it goes. They're used to that. They're expecting that. So I don't, like, it's going to be fun. It's going to be different. Arizona's probably going to lose a few more conference games than we're used to, and it's going to be totally fine. But going into the season, like, yeah, if you would have this time last season thought that Arizona was going to bring the roster that they did to, like, the first game of the year, you'd be like, what? You know, I don't think it was Keyshawn Johnson, I think, was in the portal. No, he wouldn't have been because he was still playing in the tournament. So, mm-hmm. like, Keyshawn Johnson, Caleb Love were not even thought of to be Wildcats. So, we'll see. It's always possible, hey, like, you give them the faith and that confidence, and then it doesn't work out. Like, that's, sure, maybe. But I would have every expectation that if everyone that Arizona thinks is coming back comes back, some will take steps forward. And then Arizona going shopping in the portal will find some difference makers or some people to fill some holes for them. What does that mean? Does that mean we go into the season again thinking, oh, maybe it's a tournament team, but round of 32 or maybe a Sweet 16, only to have them play a lot better early on and change those expectations? Maybe. But I'll take that again. Like, I'm good with that.
Yeah, I'm just sitting here, and I am not ready to handle the Arizona fan panic after every loss. It's like they could lose 12 games next year in this Big 12 and be a better team.
Baylor and, was, what seed was Baylor? Were they a 3 seed?
Yeah, I think so.
They went 24-11, 11-7 in conference.
Yeah, Arizona had 9 losses coming into the tournament, and there was a 2 seed, and like, guys, it's just, it's... And Clemson only has had, 10 or 11?
Yeah.
Right?
Like, being in a better conference for basketball will help them.
Yeah. It will not help my tolerance level for people on boards and in the ex-Twitter machine. but just like we talked about with the non-conference this year, hopefully setting Arizona up for March to some success, limited success, I guess. I mean, one game doesn't mean that it didn't show up, like in the Dayton game. Mm-hmm. You know, they will be March ready and March tested. It doesn't mean when you get to March Madness with the crapshoot that it is, if you have a bad day that day, you're going home. Right.
And that works for whoever they're playing too, right? Like if Arizona, yep. I mean, it'd be nice to see Arizona run to the team that shoots 4 of 30 from 3. That would be terrific. I think I would enjoy that very much.
I would enjoy a very low stress Arizona blowout for 6 straight
and
games.
And like the
March.
Sweet 16 or Elite 8 would be terrific, you know, because like obviously like Long Beach State couldn't make shots, but that was the first round. Like that was expected to be. That was they shot 3 of 17. I'd like to see 3 of 17 from Clemson. Thank you.
I will happily have lucky timing against a team having just an atrocious game.
And yeah. And like sometimes wonderful. Like there are things you can do to make that happen. And sometimes the other team just can't make a shot, you know, and that's basketball.
And like sometimes there's Sam Decker with a hand in the face hitting a fadeaway 3, and you're like, yeah.
But yeah, so moving forward, I do think it's a big offseason, and I don't know how big of a season it is. I mean, it's like you want to make a good first impression in the Big 12. You're Arizona, right? You don't want to be like, oh, you just feasted on the Pac-12, the weak Pac-12, and that's why you were good. Because it's not that way. There's a reason why Arizona beat Michigan State, beat Wisconsin, went on the road and beat Duke. It's not because they feasted on
Beat
Alabama. It's not because they feasted on a weak Pac-12, right? They were a good team. They've been a good program for most of the last couple of decades, but certainly the last 3 seasons. But like, I don't know. I think this is the reality for college basketball, especially the high level programs that just people have to realize and understand that. I mean, Arizona was lucky to have certain guys around for the last 3 seasons for multi-year guys. And usually your multi-year guys aren't your best players. The good news is most guys aren't leaving Arizona to go to a bigger program if they're transferring. You know, in terms of like, you know, they're not like ASU, not to bring them up again, who loses like every player that was worth a damn from the year before. It's like they could go make more money and play at a better school now after the stepping stone that was Tempe. Like Arizona's usually not losing guys for that reason. Yeah, they're losing a Morauskas or a Philly B because they want to go play somewhere. An Adama Ball, they're losing because they want to go play somewhere. I can live with that. You know, does that mean they won't lose a player who's out of eligibility or who's exhausted their time at Arizona and wants to move on for something else? I have no idea. But Arizona is usually not at risk for just losing their best players to a better program.
Yeah.
Like, which is nice.
I mean, there's a possibility one of Arizona's starters this year becomes a starter, one or more becomes a starter at another program, and that might be fine by Arizona, if depending on what they replace it with. We don't know.
But this is just how it goes. Like, you have to change your roster. You have to recruit your guys, re-recruit your guys, recruit portal players, and recruit traditional freshmen. And as the COVID years start to run out, I think it'll change things again. You know, things might go somewhat back to normal-ish. But it's a different world for college basketball, for building teams. And I think it's a different world for the tournament. Like, you always talk about the parity. Like, this is why, like, as we were getting, we're recording Saturday before the games start, but you have NC State and Alabama in the Final Four. This Alabama, of course, they were a one seed last season and lost in the Sweet 16. Now they're back as a four seed, and they're in the Final Four. You know, it doesn't have to make sense. It's just the way it goes.
Yeah. They were a one seed last year, lose Jaden Bradley to Arizona, and now they're in the Final Four.
It's going to be an off season, but I think Arizona basketball off seasons can generally be pretty fun. But the question is, do you trust Tommy Lloyd as a roster builder and a coach to develop the players he has and get the most out of them? And I do. You mentioned it earlier in the show, Brad, like people, the expectation, they're going to win some games. All of a sudden now it's like a Sweet 16 team that we thought maybe going into the season makes the Sweet 16. It's disappointing. It's like you could argue there wasn't a surefire NBA player in that starting lineup, like lottery pick or anything like that, and they maximized the talent on that roster. Like, you can make the case that the last 2 years especially, Tommy Lloyd's gotten as much out of those teams as he could. Now, could they have gone farther in the tournament? Sure. Absolutely, they could have, and probably should have. I mean, definitely should have last year. Mm-hmm. But, like, is he underachieving with these rosters just because they lose before the third weekend of the NCAA tournament? I have a hard time with that. So as long as you feel that you believe in Tommy Lloyd, the coach, Tommy Lloyd, the recruiter, and Tommy Lloyd, the roster builder, then you can enjoy the offseason, see what happens, and trust that there's going to be a pretty good team, you know, tipping off in November.
Yeah, I think you're right, Adam. And if look at the Caleb Love experience, the Clemson game notwithstanding, was near best case scenario when everybody was panning it initially. Mm-hmm. Does Tommy Lloyd get credit for that? I think he partially should. Omar Ballo, his development at Arizona and from Gonzaga, he was kind of just an intriguing talent when mm-hmm. he came over. You know, he's turned himself into an all-conference center. Mm-hmm. And I actually think Trevis has much higher upside than Omar Ballo. I think Omar Ballo is listed at 7 feet. He is like 6'9", man.
Trevis is a load.
Trevis, I think, is a legit 7'2". I've walked next to Ballo. He is not that tall, but, you know.
But he is thick.
He is thick with at least 3 C's.
And Trevis can make free throws. That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Like Coloco a couple years ago, when he was making free throws, like, wow, this is... I love Ballo. I appreciate everything he did for Arizona. But that was a fatal flaw.
I mean, it didn't have to be fatal, but it was certainly a flaw.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, if Tommy Lloyd has a record of developing players and he has a lot of young talent coming in and there's a lot of people that want to play in his system and get the most out of him, and look, he can go to the guys in the portal and say, look what I did with Caleb Love. I can help you get where you want to go.
Yeah. Keyshawn Johnson had a good experience, right? Played as a starter. His offensive game expanded. So there's a lot 100%. To offer in the portal and a lot to offer for recruits. So Arizona basketball, be disappointed, sure. Be bummed they're not playing in the Final Four. Nothing guarantees they'll ever get back, but I'd like to think that as long as Tommy Lloyd keeps them at the level they are, and I have every reason to think he will, that they will eventually break through. They'll win those four straight games in the tournament, and it'll be like, oh, this is amazing. And, you know, then hopefully they win the whole thing. So, Brett, let's take one more break, and we come back. I think we'll switch the focus to some football. Spring ball has started. We'll do that and some news and notes. We're back. It's Wildcat Radio 2.0. I think it's time to turn the page. I mean, there's always going to be more men's basketball stuff to talk about as the offseason, especially as the portal goes. But let's turn the page, Brett, to something more exciting that has, you know, had a great offseason. Football. Yay. And yeah, being a little facetious there, but the offseason wasn't bad. It was eventful, though. But finally, the spring ball has begun. Brent Bray and his staff got on the field with their new team, with their players. And I mean, obviously, this time of year, everyone's happy, everyone's excited, everyone's ready for their bigger role coming up. And, you know, but I will say that everything you're hearing so far seems to be pretty positive. You know, that Nofa Fita and Team Mech look like they're picking up right where they left off, that their running back room has its depth, it's deep again. you know, with guys like Speedy Luke looks ready to take over, take on more of a role. Maybe they have an idea of how to use him differently than the last coaching staff did. I did see one comment from Brent Brenner. He's like, he believes in playing, you know, multiple receivers throughout the game, which has to be music to a lot of players' ears. We went the last two seasons with basically, you know, six receivers, which I understood. I had no problem with that. But when there's talent, when there's Malachi Ryan, when there's a, you know, A.J. Jones, when there's a Kevin Green Jr., when there's, you know, Tapley and all these different players who can probably get a snap here or there, you know, that probably didn't make a lot of them feel good. So, yeah, it seems like early returns so far from Brent Brennan and his staff and the early going are pretty good.
Yeah, it's I'm reminded when during kind of the chaos, and I was just like, after stopping to remind myself, Arizona has two potential legitimate All-Americans at quarterback and wide receiver on their offense. And most of what was a pretty solid offensive line coming back, you know, and the guy, you lost a potential first round left tackle. No way around that. That's tough to replace. I feel better about it when you have a four-star tackle guy entering his second season as somebody that can be able to potentially do that. You know, you have Alex Deuce that transferred over, whether he plays guard or tackle. You know, obviously there's still, it's spring. There's guys that'll show up in the summertime. There's going to be a whole other portal period. I think there's a approximately -1,000% chance Arizona will not add another quarterback or two, because you usually don't just have two scholarship quarterbacks. That can become a disaster. You know, you mentioned Speedy Luke. I think you've seen the photo his dad like posted on Twitter of him post workout. Speedy looked like he got jacked a little bit too.
Well, and you got Brandon Johnson in that room, who it's like Jordan Washington. It's an intriguing room. And Kwali Conley, you know, Bill.
Yeah,
it's a good room. It's intriguing as hell.
The running back room will not be the problem, especially with what should be an above average offensive line
and dynamic passing game again.
Yeah. Kevin Green, A.J. Jones, Malachi Riley are guys you expect are going to get to see the field a bit. You know, T-Mac is obviously still there and attract a lot of attention.
That's the thing to watch as they, you know, I don't think it's going to be a problem with this offense. But obviously when you have, you know, Jacob Cowing, he takes a lot of attention too from someone like T-Mac. So these other guys are going to need to step up. I mean, MLC is still there. He hasn't gone anywhere. So as long as they can get more, you know, maybe the tight ends, Keon Burnett, you know, Tyler Powell, maybe there's more of a role for some of these tight ends too with Tanner McLaughlin gone. But you're going to need other people in the passing game to take some of the focus off of T-Mac. If they want to bracket T-Mac, you got to make them pay elsewhere. And what I like about it is, I know Dino Babers, the offensive coordinator, he's asked, like, what kind of offense do you run? He's like, we got to see. You know, want to tailor. And every coaching staff has a style that they want to run, yes. But then everything that I love hearing about this coaching staff or from them is like, yeah, well, this team won 10 games last season. They brought a lot of it back. They don't need to they're not reinventing the wheel with them. Like, you want to integrate your scheme and what you're comfortable with, what you think works. But there's no reason to be like, oh, we're going to change everything. You know, like, this is how we do it. Like, they're really trying to mold what they've done before with other schools and other programs with what Arizona's returning talent has shown that they can handle very, very well and play really well. And I think that's how you get the most out of this season. And what's fun about this season, like, we're talking about, like, with Tommy Layton basketball, how important this next season is for me. It's going to be his fourth year, whatever. For Brent Brennan, who comes over from San Jose State, you know, smaller school with, you know, good success, not dominant, wasn't, you know, a can't-miss next-level coach. But he takes over a pretty good situation. If they can go win, you know, 9 games, maybe 10 games again, all of a sudden it's like, oh, maybe you can keep this going. You know, he has a lot coming back. And a lot has to go right. Guys have to stay healthy. You know, it's a different schedule, all sorts of things. Bounces that went their way last season have to go their way again. But if he can have that soft landing and that nice little honeymoon period, that honeymoon season where things can build off of or maintain from what he's taking over, then I think it allows him to kind of sell that, hey, we can win too. Like, we know how to coach. We know how to game plan. We know how to call plays. And it allows him to keep going with this. Like, there's going to be a dip as guys like Fifita and T-Mac graduate or go pro. But if you can keep winning with this group, it's going to say a lot of good things about you as a staff. And that's why I think they're so smart to kind of marry what they do with what this team and a lot of these players have done, because you want to get the most out of this roster like you do.
Well, in a funny way, not to keep looking to the past, Jed Fish would talk about building the culture, and he succeeded more than I think he thought he did. Right. And that's where there wasn't the mass exodus. That was player driven. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Did I thought we were friends. Donations to out of spite probably help win a few battles. Yeah, of course. But, you know, Noah Fifita and T-Mac could have gone anywhere and made more money at any school, mm-hmm. almost assuredly beyond Seattle. I think even
Alabama was one of the stories that came out. It's like, they were never even in the portal. How does this work? But whatever.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, I think the culture that Jed Fish proclaimed to be building and maybe have, I don't want to say accidentally, because I don't think it was I don't think he was doing it facetiously, but he just never had he had an intention of having that culture travel. you know, what that foundation he built is now the best path forward is Brent Brennan and staff, with how genuine of people they are. And I think anybody that's going to meet them, and if they see success on the field, paired with the culture off the field, paired with the personalities and the authenticity of the coaching staff, there's a real non-zero chance for magic to happen from that builds something that is really built to last.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be curious to see it. Like, spring help practice is like, yeah, there's interesting things. There's guys you want to see develop. There's guys you want to see pop up a little bit. But it's not the final roster.
It's not fall camp. Yeah. I think Brennan said they have like 14 open scholarships, so they could go portaling. And who knows, they might lose some guys to the portal too, right? But like, I know some like Takario Davis, he's like, yeah, I wanted to give this coaching staff a chance. Odds that he gives the coaching staff a chance and decides, you know what, I don't like what I've seen. Probably slim. Like, you definitely like the authenticity, right? Like, everyone has, it seems like, in their quote, and I don't expect them to come out and say, yeah, I don't like these coaches, but I'm going to do my best. Like, you're not going to hear that in their interviews. But there does seem to be an appreciation or a value for what this staff, their personalities, their authenticity, and everything they're doing. I mean, you could tell also their love for the program. Like, and I'm not big on hiring just alums, you know that. But like, Brent Brown has a connection. This was a dream job for him. Doesn't mean he's going to be at Arizona forever. If he has great success, you know, I would expect him to bounce too. Like, Dino Babers has coached here before, obviously. Dwayne Aquina. Like, there's a lot of connections to Arizona which add to that authenticity. Like, not to like harp on Jed Fish because he's gone, he's not that coach. I genuinely believe that he was selling what he believed. Like, he was all in on Arizona until he was out of Arizona. I do believe that. And that's what led to this culture of being all in and committed to the University of Arizona, to your brothers, to your teammates. And yeah, that could go a long way if it's paired with, I mean, it's talent. It's not just like players who want to be in Arizona. There's some real talented players paired with a coaching staff that, I mean, as long as they're good coaches, can game plan, can scheme, can make adjustments and everything and maximize the talent they have, everything else seems to be falling into place. And I don't think they're going to be a 10-win team every year, but nothing says they can't win 7-8 games most seasons with the occasional 9-10 win year. Like, mm-hmm. nothing says that can't happen. So, like, I know some of the, like I said, all the press conferences now, there's not going to be anything bad coming out of these things. But you like hearing from them, like, why did you decide to stay? We want to give these coaches a chance. Or some of, like, the transfers. I know recently it's like Alexander Deuston and Chuba Mai. Like, they're like, why did you, like, you committed to the old coaching staff. Like, why did you decide to stick with it? And they all had, like, really good answers. You know, it's like, oh, no, they once they met the team, once they just felt, you know, the campus, all those things, like, they wanted to stay. But it also took the new coaches coming in and probably reassuring them, like, hey, like, we'll take care of you. Like, we're going to win games, we're going to develop you, and we're going to take care of you as people. If they hadn't done that, then any one of these guys could still go. So it's a mm-hmm. lot for a new coaching staff, but it's certainly a very soft landing, or can be a soft landing, with expectations. Not too many new coaches have the expectations that Arizona's going to enter the season with, but it could be a lot of fun. And yeah, if Brent Brennan and the staff, if they can win between, I'll say, 8 and 10 games, depending on how things go. And it's early. It's April 6th that we're recording. So their roster isn't even close to being complete. But if they can do that, then it probably allows Arizona to not only survive the coaching staff departure they had, but continue to thrive even with it. So, you know.
One thing that I think about, kind of where Brent Brennan's walking into the situation with this roster that is ready to succeed today, and we talk about his authenticity and how likable an affable mm-hmm. of a guy he is. You know, I think there's like an unspoken thing below the surface where people that are skeptical of Brent Brennan, or even players and recruits in a cutthroat industry that is college football trying to get to the NFL, I think there's a significant chunk of doubt that comes with, oh, it's a nice guy's finish last kind of thing. Mm-hmm. With him stepping into a position where he already has the talent at San Jose State, he got a lot out of less talent. if he can show he can maximize this in a less toxic environment than what a lot of college football programs are, you know, and like he's walking in with, he doesn't have to start from scratch. He's getting, he's, he, you know, he's not born on third base as the Arizona's football coach, but he's probably standing on second base.
Well, think of the team that Jed Fish took over, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like this is more akin, I mean, it's obviously better than what Kevin Sumlin took over, even though Kevin Sumlin took over a bowl team that had won, what, seven games, but with on the back of Khalil Tate, or the arm and the legs of Khalil Tate, more so than his back. But,
the legs.
Yeah, the legs, mostly that season. But certainly, like, Brennan's taking over a pretty good situation. This is not a bad roster. It's not the same roster, and he mentioned he's, like, telling, like, the expectations, like, that they have. Like, it's not the same team that won 10 games last season. New coaches, a lot of new players in place. You know, they lost their left tackle. They lost their top two running backs. They lost one of their top two receivers, their tight starting tight end. They lost a lot of the defensive line. So it's a different team, but it is not a bad – the cupboard is hardly empty for him. So, yeah, if he can win, and I think people want him to win. Like, he reminds me a lot – like, I've been watching his press conferences now during camp, and I think he's a lot more comfortable because there's football happening, right? He can talk about what he's seeing, what he's telling the team, as opposed to just, like, other things, the ancillary stuff that when he first got hired in interviews he did. He seems a lot more comfortable to me. Maybe he's just – he's been on the job now for a few months. He's like, okay, you know, maybe he's just settled in. But he does kind of remind me of Tommy Lloyd in that way. Just kind of like a little bit folksy, seems like a really nice guy, and seems like I've never met Tommy Lloyd, I've never met Brent Brennan, but they seem genuine people. And I think that goes a long way, especially if you show you can develop and win. Because people want to play for guys, like for coaches, and I don't say guys, because like anybody, any coach who shows that they care about you and can help you be the best, like your best self, that goes a long way, especially because Arizona has resources. You know, they got a good football facility now. There's money. There's a decent enough NIL. Like, there's no reason why they can't continue to win some games in Tucson. But it starts, I think, by continuing to win this season.
As somebody that did randomly meet Tommy Lloyd right after the hire for 30 seconds, he is, in fact, a nice guy. I've told you that story, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, and, you know, where the most question marks are on this team, I think I don't think there's doubts that the Arizona offense will be effective. You know, I think there's questions about about Dino Babers as a play caller and how he fits the scheme to his players. He seems to be indicating as such, but you have enough talent on the line and at receiver and at quarterback, you know, you'll accidentally
fall into some points. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not going to get no first downs for a half. Right.
I would hope not.
You know, disaster would have to strike injury wise on like multiple levels for this to happen.
Which it could happen. It's football.
Oh, well, that's why you need to have some more quarterbacks, too. But I think there's more questions on the defensive side of the ball. Bill Norton coming back was huge. There was a lot of turnover. But the thing that also, you know, some of the guys that are coming back that we're excited about now were not guys we were necessarily excited about coming back last year this time, which speaks to the development, especially of Dwayne Aquina with working with the secondary and now in charge of the program. And that guy seems, I don't know if a guy that was already that high energy can be invigorated, but you can just see he's like really happy with his life right now. Mm-hmm. And you bring in a pretty highly touted former defensive coordinator as your linebackers coach, former head coach.
Yeah, Danny Gonzalez.
And probably you probably have a handshake agreement of a succession plan for when Aquina retires. And you're curious to see what he can do with like a linebacker room that has more equal amounts of questions and talent, if that makes sense.
No, there's a lot to be excited about, like even more so than going into last season, because there were all those unknowns of last, like, are they better than the team that won five games? Now we've seen a lot of this talent is somewhat proven, you know, but again, it's a whole new season. So you still have to prove, you have to do it again. Like, you don't get to rest on your laurels from last season. You're not automatically in the playoff because you won 10 games last season. But there's reason to believe and feel confident that, like, maybe they take a step back because things have to go right. You have to stay healthy at the right places. They won some close games last season. You know, not that they could have gone either way. They came in on like a last second field goal, but they, you know, they beat Colorado in a close one. Oregon State was pretty close, right? Like, there were some close games. Stanford could have gone either way. A lot of people think if Delora doesn't get hurt, that goes a different way. And obviously the season goes entirely different if he never gets hurt. But, you know, that's the exciting thing for them is, I mean, it's a new coaching staff, which is always exciting, but it's not a new coaching staff because the team was terrible, which is weird. But it's, you know, hey, that's a good roster with a new coaching staff with some fresh ideas. We'll see.
It's a new coaching staff because the prior team was excellent.
I mean, it's kind of like when Tommy Lloyd took over. Like, it wasn't like he was taking over a bad team. They just made a change at head coach. You know?
Well, but it wasn't just that they made a change. It's that their coach got poached, and that hasn't happened to Arizona in our adult lives.
So we'll see what happens there. Brett, let's move over to the diamond. Softball actually starting to play some pretty decent softball. They're 23-12-1 on the season. I see 6-8 in the Pac-12. It's not an easy conference ever. But Caitlin Lowe's team is, you know, starting to find itself a little bit. We'll see. You know, they're winning games, which is nice. Baseball, nice little 5-game winning streak for Chip Hale's team. I guess, I mean, they're 15-13 overall now. Their pitching staff's been, like, among the best in the conference. So that's neat. That's not normal.
So let's just take this year's pitching staff with last year's offense and then take over the world.
Chase Davis, what are you up to these days?
I mean, they're 15-13, but I think even before the last couple wins, Adam, they were in, somebody was doing the postseason projections, and Arizona was in.
Wow.
Because of their strength of schedule has been ridiculously high. And, you know, the sad reality is that a lot of those losses for a good stretch there were, you know, one run games that they just found ways to not quite seal the deal. And now that they've won 5 straight games, I guess Chip Lloyd or Chip Hale can recruit, whereas 5 games ago he couldn't.
I'm not a Chip Hale guy or a Chip Lloyd guy for that matter. But
yeah, I just had a mini stroke there, Adam. It's fine.
You look okay. Don't worry about that eye. You're fine. But
do you smell eggs too?
But it's always fun to joke about medical emergencies on the pod. But it's a long season, and like the thing with Chip Hale that's different, I mean, it's kind of similar to what I guess Brent Brennan has taken over, is that he took over a good roster, right? He was able to keep a lot of guys. It's baseball. It's different. He was able to keep a lot of guys in his first couple seasons. He made the postseason off the backs of he had to recruit some of those guys and keep some of them, but a roster that Jay Johnson had built, right? And we saw what Jay Johnson did at LSU, won a championship recently, so like he could build a roster. It's Chip Hale, as those guys leave the program, can he bring in enough to keep Arizona baseball where we think Arizona baseball can and should be? The jury's still out on that one. We don't know. You know, it's not like they dominated. They got to the tournament last season and then fell flat on their faces. This year, they're hanging in there, and they might make the tournament. If they start to pick things up, if the bats get more consistent and the pitching stays this way, then sure. No one says they can't, and being Arizona helps and playing the tough schedule they have. I mean, yeah, they lose to Alabama by 1. Dallas Baptist was number 25, lose to them by 1. ASU, those games in Tucson, they lost, you know, 3-2, 4-0, and then they won 14-3. So on the aggregate, like the totality, they beat ASU handily. Just lost
that's
a couple
that,
close ones
that,
and blew
that's
them
how
out.
That works, right?
Yeah, I think that's how baseball works, right? If you go total runs scored and against. But no, I mean, it's baseball, right? It's a long season. But if they can just, you know, get some consistency, like I think it's a big season for Chip Hale because it's like pretty much all his guys now. But not in that if they don't make the term that I think the postseason is going to get fired. I don't think they're firing Chip Hale, like, ever. Like, they have to have a few really – I mean, granted, there's a new AD and it's going to be a new president. We could talk about that briefly, too. It's like, maybe. But I don't think they have any interest in finding a new baseball coach anytime soon. So I think he's got a lot of slack in terms of building this program or getting it to where he wants it to be. And I'm rooting for the guy. Like, that dude bleeds Arizona red and blue. Like, if he fails, it's not due to a lack of effort or desire. But I'm just I'm still not sold. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to give him time to sell me.
And I'm not necessarily a Chip Hale or Chip Lloyd, as you call him.
Oh yeah.
I'm not
put that on me.
I'm not necessarily at a.
You got a little bit of drool coming out of the side of your mouth there, Brett. I would.
I think I try to approach Chip Hale as a down the middle kind of observer. And I kind of expected, you know, I talked about it, I think even like a month ago, I was like, college baseball is weird. And I think you can have a way different team at the beginning of the season than at the end of the season.
Yeah.
And I think Chip Hale's the kind of head coach in college that can help facilitate that slope of that line being steeper than most.
Maybe. I mean, in the last couple of seasons, they've really got it going late.
And so I kind of expected them to make, you know, some dramatic gains. I don't know what the ceiling is on this team this season or in Hale's tenure. But I at the end of the day, he is a good baseball guy, right?
Yeah, he is a baseball guy through
and through. He's like Tommy Lloyd and Brent Brennan in the sense of like Arizona has like some of the most likable, authentic coaches in their big sports right now. And so I think that there is a better chance than not that he will exceed people's expectations. And it's baseball. And I know I make the joke that it's like about the recruiting thing, but it's such a different thing. It's not just because like you have to have guys not only come, they have to then commit, not go to the majors, mm-hmm. stick around. You know, Mason White was a Chip Hale guy.
He's a stud.
Kid.
Yeah.
He's been a monster, right? Yeah. And you know, in college baseball, you give partial scholarships because you can't give full scholarships. So like, if you can identify local talent like that, where you can give them a 25% scholarship, if you do that with a couple guys every year, you're gonna be just fine.
Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, if they're rotation guys, like, I mean, Jackson Kent, and I'm just reading this box, I'm not like watching a lot of Arizona baseball games, admittedly, but you know, he's 2-1 with a 2.79 ERA. Clark Candiotti, 3.21 ERA. Cam Walty, 3.27. If you get those out of your starters, you're going to have a chance in pretty much every game. And then it gives your offense time to kind of settle in, right? Because they don't have the mashers like they had the last couple of seasons. They're all gone now. They went pro. But, yes, there's time. And, yeah, someone like Mason White, who's just been obliterating the baseball. Like, that's nice. And that's, yeah, Chip Hale is a baseball guy. He's a good baseball teacher. And I know they made that change of pitching coach going this. I forget the guy's name that they got, but hey, that seems to be making a bit of a difference. Maybe it's like coaching and recruiting, getting the right guys in. But either way, they're getting the pitching, especially starting rotation, starting pitching that they've needed for the last like five seasons. So if that can continue, it gives the bats, which are generally better, and obviously playing at high core, but more of an offensive ballpark. If they can get the bats going, then, yeah, there's no reason that this team can't do kind of what last year's did, which is get hot late in the season, really make that push, and hopefully do a little bit more damage in the postseason. So if they do that, I mean, if they can do that this season, I think I might come around on Chip Hale being, like, the guy for them because he's doing it with his guys, with his players, you know, and, like, just a program, a process that seems to be working. Like, that's just how it happens with Chip Hale. But I'm interested. I'm curious. Like, I'll be keeping an eye on it, no doubt.
When It's still early in his tenure when you're talking about that building the program and the process from a foundational perspective.
And it's not his fault he took over a program that was good. Like, I don't blame him for having some of Jay Johnson's guys stick around. Like, that's not his fault.
Like, yeah, why didn't Russ Pennell go to the Final Four after taking over an interim for Lou Dolson, guys?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, and like, you know, he's made some...
I mean, Russ Pennell got them as far as Tommy Lloyd has. He got him to a Sweet 16.
Fair enough.
They lost by 30, but yeah, he got them there.
Yeah. I mean, he's shown, you know, one of the hires he brought over from South Carolina, who's had, you know, huge success prior to that, was Trip Couch, the recruiting mm-hmm. coordinator. You know, it's too early for people to like be calling for Chip Hale's head.
Oh, no.
Well, it happens all the time because Arizona fans sometimes are ridiculous. Like,
every now and then it happens.
You know, I think it's more likely than not they're going to outperform the expectations commensurate with what the perceived talent level is because of the baseball guy that Chip Hale is. And maybe they have, you know, you have Mason White, who's just like he's not a physically imposing specimen, but that guy's a ball player, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what Chip Hale was as a baseball player, right? And, you know, the best coaches in my experience are the guys that had really great success with the least amount of talent in any sport. And that's where I think Chip Hale fits that mold. I think that helps him identify who for lack of a better term, the winners are and not the guys that are just like rely solely on raw talent. And you tend to win a lot of games when you identify those kind of guys and build that kind of culture.
And this may be more of a Chip Hale type team too, not necessarily mashing the ball and relying on the long ball, but piecing together innings at bats, you know, long innings, things like that. Stealing bases, they're 25 of 30 stolen base attempts this season. So we'll see. Like the more of it his players, the more we get to see what kind of style Chip Hale wants to coach and what he can do. And so yeah, I give him that chance. Just like Caitlin Lowe deserves every opportunity to take over from a legend like she did, like to build their programs in their image. And again, like I said, I don't think Arizona's any interested in like replacing either. I don't think they want to replace any coaches, really. They're not in a financial situation to do that right now. But with the new athletics director and everything, we'll see when she comes in. Or she's in now, actually. But, you know, see how they can try to balance things. Women's basketball, of course, it's going to be a really interesting offseason. Transfer portal, Giveth, Paulina Paris from North Carolina. So really interesting to see what Adia Barnes can come up with, because her team probably overachieved by the end of the season, making the NCAA tournament like they did in winning their play-in game and then losing a close one to Syracuse. But, you know, there's talent on the roster, and as long as they can keep a lot of the players who played key roles down the stretch and then add to it, I think Arizona's basketball will be good once again, which is, that's how it should be. I think Adia Barnes is that quality of a coach. If she can kind of get her type of players in and really build that foundation for herself, then that'll be fun. All right, quick. Bobby Robbins announced he's going to, I mean, resignation in like 2 years, unless they find someone to replace him sooner. I like that. Like, I'm going to leave in a couple of years unless you guys, you know, find my replacement sooner. That's cool.
I'm gonna leave when my contract was up and I was probably going to retire.
But I'm going to fall on the sword for all the mistakes I have made in, a year and a half, in 2 years. Kari, this is not.
I don't even know how to react to all of the Bobby Robbins stuff. I'm not sure what it means or doesn't mean at this point.
I mean, it's. I think the key is obviously like Arizona, and like it's not that they've had this. I mean, there's. It's kind of like with when Dave Hickey was let go. It's like, I can understand this. Like Robbins has not. I mean, he's done some good things. I mean, he's a big sports guy. So as someone like, we're a sports podcast. So obviously, him caring about athletics has been nice, better than the alternative like at ASU where they're. You know, president doesn't really seem to care about sports, and look what's happened. You know, like that's, I'd rather have someone who cares, but maybe Arizona will be better with a president who understands the role sports plays, but isn't a passionate fan like Robbins was, you know, and also just a better administrator for the school. Cause that's your primary focus. Let's be honest here. Like he could love sports all he wants. Arizona should not have had a budget miscalculation. The online school that he bought or whatever was not good. Like he's been around for a while. I don't mind them finding someone new. Hopefully they find someone good.
Yeah, Robbins is the president that might care too much about sports, where he was allegedly telling football coaches the plays that he thinks they should run. allegedly. We'll see. I think he was not going to be extended beyond this contract.
Oh, I'm sure not. I'm sure not. So you can't fire me. I'm going to quit at the end of my contract.
And Michael Crow will make his play to be president of all of the universities of Arizona because his ego dictates that. but yeah, we'll see. I'm Arizona made what seems like a really strong hire for the athletic director position. We'll see if they're able to do so for the president of the university, but that's not our job to figure out, Adam.
And I think it's different people who hire that one too. Like, that's like, I don't even know who chooses the president.
I think it's the Board of Regents, and there was just a bunch of turnover there. And so, you know.
Buckle up.
It's just like Arizona's basketball roster. People fear when there's uncertainty and it's not predictable, but uncertainty doesn't mean, you know, change doesn't mean necessarily good, doesn't mean necessarily bad, just means change.
Yeah. And at least if you care about sports, it seems like the programs and the athletic department as a whole. Have a pretty good foundation in place. You know, that's the nice thing. They're not looking to or needing to hire high-profile sports coaches. Their Olympic sports have good coaches. Their women's sports have good coaches. So it's like things can change. Obviously, people can get poached and whatever. But Arizona's in a pretty good place in terms of athletics. And, like, there's a good foundation. Like, they're there, right? Not a lot has to change for athletics to be successful. Like, we'll see with the Big 12 move. But everything seems to be in place for athletics, especially to move forward, keep moving forward, and keep being successful on the court, on the field, wherever they're playing. So, yeah, the off-the-field stuff when it comes to school presidents, I don't know much about that, so I'll just hope for the best. They'll name someone, but I'm not going to know who that is, and I'll hope for the best. Like the athletic director search, I'm like, I don't know athletic directors. Like, just hopefully find someone good. Like...
You'd raise an eyebrow if it was somebody named Sparky McSundevil, though.
They hired Greg Byrne as athletic director, and he turned out to be fine.
Oh, but wouldn't trust anybody named Sparky.
No. I think my wife wanted to name our dog Sparky. I'm like, nope, that's not going to happen. nope. Definitely nope.
So it was a maybe for a minute.
It was not a maybe ever. It was a, why would you even suggest that? What are you doing?
Oh,
yeah. Well, Brett, I think we've had a long show today this week. That's good because we're a little bit late. But, yeah, it's we record on April 6th. Final Four has yet to happen, so we'll see. I mean, watch it be like Alabama and NC State. Like, oh, geez, you know. Like, Alabama national champs. Like, but Arizona beat them.
It's going to be UConn-Purdue, like, was the obvious two best teams anyway.
Most likely. And I can live with that, you know. Let the best teams battle it out for the tournament. Like, totally fine with that. Just wish Arizona was one of the best teams. They were not. I mean, they are one of the better teams in college, but they were definitely not one of the best teams. Anyway, appreciate you all listening. You can find us on the social media, on the Twitter machine, at Wildcat Radio AZ. Wildcat Radio AZ also happens to be our promo code for home field gear. I'm wearing one of my new home field shirts right now. It's very soft. I love it. I might wear it all the time with the occasional wash in between.
You look nice in it, Adam.
I do. I make it look good. I mean, it would look good on anybody. But yeah, if you haven't bought anything from Home Field ever, go to their shop. You can find them like in our profile on our Twitter, actually, a link there to hit up Home Field. But promo code Wildcat Radio AZ, you get 15% off your first order. So yeah, do that. Their gear is soft and it looks good. It even makes me look good. You can find us on iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe to us. Leave us a rating and a review. If you leave us a review on iTunes, we will read that review on our pod. Brett, do we have anything?
We do not.
That's okay. It's okay. Sometimes our show leaves you all speechless. I get it.
I'm sure somebody's writing a review. I wish you guys would be speechless once in a while.
Yeah, I wish you guys would just stop talking. I'd rather listen to silence for 60 minutes with the commercials every 25. We'll just do a show in sign language one time. Yeah, it's time. All right. We'll get into more football stuff, more spring sports stuff in the coming shows, obviously, as those seasons continue, especially hoping that they're continuing well. We got some guests, some fun people to talk to give us that insight. But, yeah, we appreciate y'all listening, and we'll catch y'all next week. And until then, remember to bear down.
Bear down.